TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Count every vote. Elections and democracy in Ohio. While elections around the world, be it the Ukraine or Iraq, rate high in the U.S. media attention, and while election fraud and verification abroad are discussed in great detail, an almost eerie silence covers the 2004 election in the U.S. While the international press asks whether George Bush really did get elected this time, the U.S. commercial media barely pay attention to voting machines that leave no record, to voters removed from voter rolls, and to uncounted ballots. The Pacifica radio correspondent Evan Davis lives in the battleground state of Ohio. He was witness to the unprecedented effort of voter registration and to the fight against the use of the Diebold voting machines long before they were put to use. He remains involved as investigative journalist in the legal challenges to the outcome of the vote in Ohio that may change who will be president for the next 4 years. Evan Davis produced a one-hour documentary for TUC Radio. This is the first part that gives you a sense of the passion and activism leading up to the November 2004 elections and the disbelief at the outcome. In part two, Evan will take on the issue of election fraud. Here's Evan Davis' documentary, part one, Count Every Vote, Elections and Democracy in Ohio.
As this program goes to air, the outcome of the 2004 presidential election has still to be determined. Across the nation, people turned out to vote in record numbers, many for the first time in their lives, as many regarded this as the single most important election in the history of America and the world. In the 2000 election, the presidential race was decided not by the popular vote or even by the Electoral College, but by a Supreme Court decision which halted the recounting of ballots in Florida. Some Americans believe that election was stolen. How the election of 2004 is recorded in history will depend in part on the diligence and perseverance of people whose singular demand is that their votes simply be counted. This is the first installment of a two-part series produced for TUC Radio that will focus on the electoral battle in Ohio, where unprecedented voter turnout was met with unmitigated voter suppression, especially of African-American, Latino, and student voters, and where allegations of fraud and possible vote tampering have yet to be investigated either by the courts or by Congress. This, then, is the story of the people of Ohio and their historic struggle to preserve the sanctity of their vote and the dream of democracy in America.
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are a grandmother's prayers. We are a grandmother's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of dust, sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of light, and builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith, makers of peace, wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We
long before the November 2nd election in 2004, Ohio was living up to its historic designation as a so-called battleground state. Even in advance of the Democratic, Republican, and Green Party primaries, campaigns were underway in the heartland Midwestern state, both to win support for various competing candidates and to assure the integrity of the voting process itself. As early as April, the grassroots group Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections, or CASE, was holding rallies in opposition to Secretary of State Ken Blackwell's efforts to convince every county in Ohio to acquire touchscreen electronic voting machines from the Diebold Corporation, whose CEO, Walden O'Dell, had pledged at a Republican Party fundraiser to deliver Ohio's electoral votes to the GOP. The chief complaint against using the direct recording electronic machines, or DREs, from Diebold was that the machines produced no paper receipt that could allow the voter to know whether the machine had accurately recorded his or her vote. Thus, according to CASE activist Kathleen Wynn from Cleveland, who spoke at a rally in Columbus, such machines actually violate the fair voting laws, which require that any voting system must be verifiable and that all votes be able to be recounted in case of a disputed election.
We can all agree that there can be no errors against democracy, but from what I have learned about these machines in the past year and a half, I have come to believe that America is in grave danger of no longer being a functioning democracy. For how can we have a democracy if the technology we use to vote prohibits direct voter participation? Just think about it. Voting is a three-step process. Ballots are marked, they're cast, and then they're counted. As it stands now, with these machines, voters are regulated to making inputs, not knowing whether their votes are marked, cast, or counted properly or not. That's unacceptable to me. We can't ignore the fact that these machines prohibit effective oversight, audits, or recounts because everything takes place inside these machines and is therefore unobservable, and definitely it is not transparent. Technically, voting machines have no constitutional right to be in the voting booth or even counting our votes. Why? Because laws such as the Voting Rights Act, remember that? It cannot be enforced if there's nothing for the federal observers to observe and nothing for local poll watchers to watch. In Bush, now listen to this, this is the whole crux of the argument. In Bush versus Gore, and we remember that election, the Supreme Court said that a legal vote, as determined by the Supreme Court, is one in which there is a clear indication of the intent of the voter. Voting machines reflect the action of the technology first, and the intent of the voter, maybe, maybe not.
Secretary of State Blackwell argued that the touchscreen DRE machines would reduce the chances for human error and would make bilingual balloting easier to accomplish. Federal money provided to each state under the Help America Vote Act would have been available to purchase the new machines, and in principle there was no significant objection from the county election boards, but for the fact that the Diebold machines Blackwell favored did not produce a verifiable paper audit trail. Other voting machine vendors were offering machines that produced voter verifiable paper receipts at the time, and so Blackwell's insistence on the Diebold units caused some to question the Secretary of State's commitment to fair elections. Earlier lobbying efforts by CASE had resulted in the Ohio Assembly's issuing a requirement that by 2006, all voting machines in Ohio must produce an auditable paper trail. History professor Marcia Robinson, also with CASE, felt that Ohio was positioned to lead the nation in the implementation of secure voting procedures.
I don't understand Mr. Blackwell's motives. All I can tell you is that the Ohio Constitution requires the ability to conduct recounts. I can tell you that the Joint Committee has come up with a standard that exceeds federal standards on the ability to objectively recount with bubble sheets or scantrons. You'll be able to recount it manually by humans and also by machines. There will be no more questions of hanging chads if we implement this system by November, and it can be done if the Assembly moves fast enough. This year's elections are being clouded because it's a presidential issue, but as more and more people find out that our elections may be insecure and the results may not be verifiable in the November election, they are demanding more information. It's a national issue. Ohio is poised to set a standard higher than the federal standard, and we are poised to set the standard for the entire nation. There are states waiting for Ohio to go ahead and verify the recommendations of the Joint Committee.
Over the next several months, however, Blackwell battled with lobbyists and county election boards who resisted the Diebold acquisition. In one instance, an election board was evenly divided on whether to purchase the Diebold machines, with the Democrats on the board being opposed and the Republicans being in favor. Blackwell intervened and ordered the county to purchase the new machines, but his ruling was overturned by the state assembly. Then, shortly after California decertified Diebold as a voting machine vendor due to numerous machine malfunctions and questionable practices, Blackwell was forced to withdraw his support, and no Diebold machines or other DREs were purchased in Ohio prior to the November election. With the DRE threat out of the way for the moment, groups like Case began to concentrate on issues of voter disenfranchisement, which included Ohio's laws regarding the voting eligibility of ex-felons, regulations concerning absentee ballots, and conflicting rulings from the Secretary of State's office regarding the use of provisional ballots. Provisional ballots are paper ballots that are issued to voters whose names do not appear on the voter roll book in the precinct in which they are attempting to vote. Provisional ballots are not counted until the Board of Elections can verify the voter's registration information. Initially, Blackwell had opposed any use of provisional ballots, but under the law he was unable to eliminate them entirely, and so the Secretary of State issued a series of vague and conflicting rulings in the final weeks before the election, which left both voters and election officials at the county level uncertain about whether and to whom to issue provisional ballots and under what circumstances. The Ohio Democratic Party successfully sued Blackwell at one point to prevent him from denying provisional ballots to voters who attempted to vote in precincts where they don't currently reside. In the last general election, there were more than 100,000 provisional ballots cast in Ohio, with the majority of those being cast by African Americans, Latinos, students, and the working poor. Labor and civil rights activists recognized that any limitations on the availability of provisional ballots would disproportionately affect poor and non-white voters. Provisional ballots, therefore, came to be seen as a civil rights issue. Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman addressed this point at a rally in Columbus, which was organized by the Ohio AFL-CIO.
Let me just tell you that I'm glad that you are here, because all eyes are watching our state from all over the nation and indeed around this country. A storm is brewing in Ohio. In that storm, we must ensure that the day after Election Day that the sun is shining. And when I say that, what I mean is that every vote is counted in the state of Ohio. Each and every vote is counted. Ken Blackwell was given the opportunity to open up the door for voting for all Ohioans. Instead, what he has done is close the door. Well, we are here, every man, woman, and child on this plaza today, are going to say to the Secretary of State, put your race for governor on hold. Let's make sure that everyone votes. Let's make sure that those in Cleveland aren't turned away at the polls. Let's make sure that those in Columbus aren't turned away at the polls, in Dayton and Cincinnati and all over the state of Ohio. This is about voters' rights. And as far as I'm concerned, this is about civil rights. My great-great-grandmother, her name was Margaret Dean, and she was born a slave. She was born in 1834, and she died in the 1940s. I'm her great-great-grandson. She never knew how to write, she never knew how to read, and she never voted. And her great-great-grandson is now the mayor of the city of Columbus, because we now have the right to vote. And we're not going to lose that right to vote. Too many people have died. Too many people have worked hard. We have marched in the South. We've marched in the North. And we must ensure that everyone in our city gets that chance that so many have sacrificed for. God bless you, and do your job.
Unprecedented new voter registrations and get-out-the-vote efforts in Ohio drew volunteers from all across the country in the final weeks before the election. Phone banks were set up at union halls, and groups like Move On, America Coming Together, and Democracy for America logged tens of thousands of volunteer hours informing voters of their rights and encouraging them to vote. Newly energized constituencies, including students, Muslims, and Latinos, whose numbers had increased exponentially in Ohio since the last general election, were beginning to find their political voices. Puerto Rican activist Marta Carmen Aponte held a press conference in Columbus before the election to encourage fellow Latinos to cast their ballots in November.
Nuestra voz es nuestro voto. We hear it all the time, but it doesn't make it less true, because after all, Cuando hablamos con nuestro voto, we are proud. We are the passionate Puerto Ricans. We really get out there and we make our voices heard. And with each vote, our voice gets louder and our message is getting clearer and clearer. Estamos aquí y vamos a votar. So now today, when we have registered over 280,000 Puerto Ricans nationwide. In almost two and a half years, and we're heading for 300, and we are going to make it before this presidential election. Because if 532 votes made the difference in Florida, imagine what 300,000 are going to say. Aquí estamos. So the message I leave you with is the message of que nada nos detenga, because it's a very, very powerful message. Let nothing stop us. When it comes to lifting our brothers and sisters out of poverty, que nada nos detenga. When it comes to getting every child, and I see many children here today, the first-class education they deserve, it doesn't matter what language they speak at home, que nada nos detenga. And when it comes to making our voices heard and making sure that Puerto Ricans get elected and that our agenda gets the attention and the priority it deserves, que nada nos detenga, señores.
Indeed, the excitement was palpable early in November 2nd as lines formed at many polling places even before they opened at 6:30 a.m.
Ain't gonna let nobody know it. Turn me round, turn me round, turn me round. Ain't gonna let nobody know it. Turn me round, keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching up the freedom lane.
By mid-morning, it began to rain steadily, and a cold northerly wind began to gust, but a majority of the voters were intrepid and endured the harsh conditions. In many precincts, volunteers from various voting rights groups brought coffee and hot chocolate, rain ponchos and umbrellas to the voters, many of whom waited in line for more than 3 hours.
A little rain ain't gonna stop nobody.
That's it.
Ain't gonna stop nobody. We're here together.
We arrived at this polling place and found that people are waiting between 2 and 3 hours to vote. And it seems that the reason is a lack of sufficient number of machines. I also heard someone say that during the primaries there were five voting machines, and now there are only 3 voting machines.
The polling place opened up 10 minutes late. One of the machines wasn't working when the polling place opened up. We have 3 machines there. That third machine appears to be tougher to reset, so it appears to be slowing things up. We're advised by people in line that customarily this polling place has 6 polling booths. Currently it has 3.
In many precincts in Columbus, especially in the urban African-American and working-class neighborhoods where lines tended to be proportionally longer than in the affluent, less culturally diverse suburbs, shortages of voting machines, misinformed poll workers, and confusion over provisional ballots compounded voters' frustrations and drove some voters away.
We have a 2-hour wait, and there's only 3 machines here, and she wanted to know, where is there any machines left?
And she said there was hundreds in the place where they had the voting machines at.
They won't
bring them up here.
So
they need to get in the truck and get somebody waiting. We're going to wait. I'll wait all night. Don't make me no difference. But look at the other people that's going to be here, that's just getting here now.
Yes, you got the elderly and everyone, right.
Walking and talking with my mind,
it will
set on freedom.
Walking
and talking with my mind,
oh Lord,
set on freedom.
Oh well, I'm
walking and talking with my mind,
it will
set on freedom. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Most of the polls in the urban areas stayed open late into the night. Exit polls still showed Senator John Kerry leading George Bush by a margin of several percentage points. But as the precincts began to report in and the tallies were compiled, the mood at the Democratic Party gathering at the Great Southern Hotel in Columbus went from jubilant to somber. Some left in despair, and a few collapsed in the hallways, weeping in disbelief. The commercial networks called the election for Bush in the early morning hours of November 3rd, and by midday, Kerry himself had conceded. No Democratic Party spokespeople could be reached for comment, and volunteers at the Kerry campaign headquarters in Columbus locked themselves inside and could be glimpsed through the windows, literally hiding their faces behind campaign literature.
And now it's a winner. Winter in America. It's the time when all of the hills done been kicked in and been betrayed. Yeah, even though it's something wrong, everybody ought to know. Winter. It seems like winter in America. Nobody knows what to say. Brother, sing a song.
Susan Truitt is an attorney who worked with the Voter Protection Coalition on Election Day. She also co-founded a Kerry campaign group in her affluent suburban neighborhood of Upper Arlington, a traditionally conservative stronghold, where in part because of her group's impressive grassroots campaigning, the votes, as reported, were almost evenly divided between Bush and Kerry.
I feel that it's inconsiderate and almost traitorous to those who worked so hard for him to concede the day after the election, when exit polls in Ohio and Florida are showing Mr. Kerry ahead and the results show him behind, where I've heard exit polls throughout the country are consistent every place except Ohio and Florida. I think it's unfair to those of us who supported him vehemently and passionately, and I think it's unfair to him and the party, and I think it's unfair to the world. How dare we concede so easily when there are questions about the Florida totals and Ohio totals?
Some confusion remained even days after November 3rd, as estimates of the number of provisional ballots fluctuated almost by the hour. On election night, one news outlet quoted Secretary of State Blackwell as declaring that more than 400,000 provisional ballots had been cast, but around 12:30 a.m., Blackwell appeared on television himself and announced that the number was closer to 250,000. By morning, that number had dropped to less than 130,000, but by the following day, it had risen again to just over 150,000. Again, Susan Truitt.
I don't think anybody at this point truly has a firm grasp on exactly how many provisional ballots were cast, because the numbers I hear keep changing. I was hearing there were 250,000 provisional ballots last night, and then today we hear there are 130,000. Let's get a definitive number. Let's get some documentation of it. Let's break it down by precinct, by county, and then we'll know whether it's within the margin of the difference between a Bush and Kerry victory right now. The margin of their victory in Ohio is not big, and it's perfectly conceivable that the provisional balloting could make the difference if we know what the real numbers are.
But the momentum that had been built prior to Election Day did not dissipate entirely, as sadness and shock turned to outrage. Throughout the week, demonstrations were held across the country and throughout Ohio. In Upper Arlington, a meeting to discuss possible next steps drew nearly 200 people. There was talk of calling for Blackwell's resignation, and various individuals began to speculate openly about mounting a legal challenge to the electoral results. Later that evening, a call was placed to this reporter by a spokesperson from the campaign of Green Party candidate David Cobb to say that the Cobb team was prepared to demand a recount in Ohio. A new groundswell of resistance was beginning in Ohio, one that had little to do with partisan politics, but which recognized the importance of voter rights as civil rights. Leslie Zack was a volunteer who aided voters on Election Day.
I felt very strongly, especially all Election Day, that the energy that was there in the community, especially what we felt in our precinct, where the anti-Bush vote went 8-1, and there was a real sense of community going on all day. We were crushed. Everybody in the neighborhood was crushed. We were shaking our heads and saying, we don't believe this. How did this happen? It did not feel like that. I've never seen a turnout or a more excited, energized turnout for anything in my lifetime, with the exception of when people were becoming awakened in the civil rights era. The energy doesn't disappear. It's there. It's waiting to be tapped. Some people are keeping it going. It's not going to go away. I believe that those pre-election organizations that were organized basically from the grassroots up are going to grow and are going to see more success than those which, however valuable they were up into the election and whatever they serve now, if they come from the top down, I don't think they're going to be as effective. I think this has to come right from the neighborhoods on up and fast.
In the next several weeks, numerous lawsuits would be launched, and Ohio would continue to be the focus of world attention, despite a veritable blackout by the commercial media, which refused, for the most part, to deviate from the standard dictum that the election in Ohio had been decided once and for all. In the next installment, we'll speak with leaders of that resistance, and we'll hear about some of the shocking discoveries they have made that lend credence to the numerous allegations of fraud in the Ohio election.
You can say you got to stop the communists. You can say that our ideals can't succeed. You can say that competition is the only way, and a global system based on greed. You can call yourself a Democrat. You can call yourself whatever you will. You can keep on stamping out the fires you start, so you might stay on top of the hill. But there will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. And little by little, or maybe all at once, you will lose, because our future is not yours to choose.
This is Pacifica Radio correspondent Evan Davis, with help in this production from Linda Burkett. For current information and updates on the Ohio election situation, visit the website of Case Ohio at www.caseohio.org or the Columbus Free Press at www.freepress.org.
You heard part one of a one-hour documentary by Pacifica Radio correspondent Evan Davis. Please come back for the next broadcast of Part 2, Election Fraud in Ohio. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour documentary by Evan Davis on elections and democracy in Ohio by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is the only support we receive and helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.